Welcome everyone to the Distant Replay podcast hosted by me, Abe Beitler, on the Emerson Podcast Network, where we talk about the evolution of NBA basketball. Brought to you by Game Time, today we will be going one-on-one with NBA insider A. Sherrod Blakely to discuss the NBA three-point line. Let's get to it. Welcome to the Distant Replay, presented by Game Time. I'm your host, Abe Beitler. On October 9th, 1979, Chris Ford of the Boston Celtics knocked down the first three in NBA history. On October 22nd, 2024, the Boston Celtics tied an NBA record, knocking down 29 three-pointers in one game. It took the NBA some time to get from point A to point B, but maybe not as long as some predicted. With the amount of three-pointers being taken in today's modern playstyle, it makes me wonder if that was ever the intention of adding the three-point line. Regardless of the intentions, the line is partially responsible for one of my favorite announcer calls of all time.
They do have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
In 1979, it was impossible to predict that we would see a shooter like Steph Curry take the league by storm with his accuracy from deep range. His dad wasn't even in the league at this point. It was also difficult to believe that teams would be assembled that have shooters at every position, with coaches like Joe Mazzulla of the Boston Celtics encouraging them to shoot most of their shots from behind the arc. Yes, I'm a Celtics fan, and I know I'm a bit biased, but what they're doing this season is beyond incredible. What's even more interesting is that they're not the first team to play the way they do. Their championship win, however, does speak volumes to the progress the league has made behind the ever-evolving three-point shot. With the most recent NBA championship being won by a team that centers so much of their offense around the three-pointer, it's only a matter of time before other teams follow this blueprint more closely. With the ability to shoot threes seeming to be a requirement for most players today, this is a strategy that will actually be possible for a lot of NBA teams. The real question I want to find the answer to is why. Why are we seeing so many threes being hoisted per game from every team around the league? We all know the three-pointer does more damage than scoring from inside the arc, but just how much more damage does it do? Today, we're going to find the answers to these questions and discuss the evolution of the three-point line more in depth. NBA expert A. Sherrod Blakely will be with us to provide some valuable insight on the matter. He's worked directly with the Celtics as a reporter, a team that, as previously mentioned, will be talked about a lot on this episode. I promise there will be a lot more to talk about than just the current day Boston Celtics. If you stay with me through the episode, we'll answer the questions I have and have some fun along the way. Let's get into the Distant Replay. So I wanted to welcome in our NBA expert, A. Sherrod Blakely. Welcome.
Glad to be here. Glad to be here. Hey, Ram.
Of course. So first off, can you tell us a little bit about your experience with the NBA?
I've been covering the NBA for the better part of the last 25-ish years. Back in 2000 was when I started covering the Detroit Pistons, back when they were actually relevant.
Won a championship in those years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 2004, they won a championship, absolutely. And I did that for about 10 years. Then I came to Boston, where I've been dealing with the Celtics in some capacity since 2009. That's kind of been my NBA journey up to this point.
Awesome. Yeah, right after the Celtics won that 2008 championship.
Yep.
Back again doing it in 2024.
Yep.
And now you're teaching at BU?
Yeah. I'm a professor of the practice at Boston University. Obviously, my emphasis is on sports journalism, but I also teach other courses as well. But sports journalism, that's kind of why I'm here. So, yeah.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, and I'm into sports journalism as well. I'm looking to take classes kind of next year.
Good.
As well, yeah. And so now kind of talking about history of the NBA, going to look at the three-point line. So beginning with kind of the introduction of the line, it was introduced actually to the NBA in 1979 as a one-year trial. That was kind of like Larry Bird, Magic Johnson's rookie year. So being a one-year trial kind of thing, we may have seen the NBA go without it. What do you think the NBA would look like without the line today?
Ooh, ugly. The thing about the three-point line, and it really began this era of increased scoring because when you think about those games back in the 70s and 80s and even early 90s, there seemed to be this need to kind of juice the game up, if you will, and give it a little bit more offensive punch. And a three-point shot has been exactly that. For many teams, it has become the ultimate equalizer. If you don't have the ability to draft a dynamic and dominant big man, if you don't have the ability to develop a dynamic or dominant big man, the three-point shot allows you to still be a relatively competitive team, even if you don't necessarily have the size that matches up well with other opponents.
I would 100% agree with that. I mean, it would be tough to see kind of certain players, like certain guards, develop in a league where there's no three-point shot. Maybe the bigs would be more dominant. And kind of what we're going to get into later is kind of how the bigs have developed a three-point shot. It's become necessary for them in a way. Mm-hmm. And so kind of follow up the last question, how different do you think the development of shooting in general would look like without the three-point shot?
Well, the biggest difference is just the extended range that the three-point shot provides. You know, before, if there was no three-point line, I'm not sure if players would have worked as hard as they have in the last couple decades, becoming more effective and efficient and proficient, for that matter, from deep range. Because if I'm getting the same point value from 25 feet as I would from 5 feet or 10 feet or 15, what's the incentive for me to take long shots? There really isn't any. So it is forced a lot of athletes through the course of time to just simply hone their games to be able to shoot from deeper. And now there's a chance to be rewarded for that with 3 points. So that's, to me, that's the most significant impact of that, the 3-point shot, is that it has created a new class of scoring in the NBA, a class that without, I don't think this would be a very entertaining or engaging game.
Exactly. And I think with that impact as well, we've kind of seen the mid-range shot disappear just because of that scoring difference. It's like, why take those close jump shots when you can cash in for three behind the line? And then kind of when they created this line, like, do you think they had any idea of how many shots would be taken per game by teams across the league?
No. I think the mindset early on was that this would be something that's more like an addendum to what teams are looking to do offensively, not necessarily the core factor of how they generate points. You know, the Celtics are on pace to set an NBA mark for 3-pointers taken per game. They're taking more than 50 a game, which is an incredible high amount of scoring. But when you look at the way their roster is constructed, it makes a lot of sense. You know, former Celtics coach Doc Rivers, who's now in Milwaukee, you know, I asked him about that a few weeks ago. And, you know, Doc talked about this Celtics team basically having guys five out, where they have 3-point shooters at every single position. I mean, Al Horford is their fifth option offensively when it comes to the 3-point shot, and he's shooting around 40% from 3-point range, which is a really good mark. And with Al Horford, you're talking about a guy that, you know, his first few years in the league, he took 3 3-pointers total in his first 4 or 5 years. And now he's averaging almost 4 3-pointers taken per game. So, again, there are lots of examples of guys who have really kind of refined their games and been able to bake in the 3-point shot to what they do.
Exactly. And I know I heard Doc bring up Peyton Pritchard as well, that one game earlier this season against the Bucks, and how he's kind of that microwave and they let him loose. And that's exactly what he had. What in terms of what they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah. And Peyton is a good shooter just in general. But when you're a good shooter and you're getting great looks, it gives a lot of credence to the belief that he is one of, if not the front runner for Sixth Man of the Year.
I think so. And as a Celtics fan myself, I am rooting for him to win that award 100%. Have you tried using Game Time for tickets? I was able to get to a Patriots game this year, but they lost. I mean, it was a great atmosphere. Drake May's first start. I really want to get to a Celtics game because they are looking amazing, and being at TD Garden with the hype crowd is electric. Game Time has a new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. Game Time Picks filters out the fluff to show you only incredible deals on great seats, so you don't have to waste time searching through thousands of tickets. I love trying to snag those last-minute deals. Last time, I saw Celtics tickets for under $30 right before tip-off. Looking now, there are some great deals for the upcoming game against the Clippers. I can see right away the lowest price and even a super deal offered by Game Time. Game Time Picks makes it easier to save more on sports, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. The all-in pricing feature allows you to view your ticket price, including fees, before you get to checkout. I love the panoramic view you get when you're viewing your tickets, just so you can get an idea of your seats before you actually buy them. Game Time offers the lowest price guarantee, or they will credit you 110% of the difference. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time Picks. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code ABE for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code ABE for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time. So kind of moving on to the man who changed the game, Steph Curry, as many crown him. The Warriors' 2015-16 season, they attempted 31.6 threes per game. Now, that was a lot back then. But looking at the league now, the Raptors attempt 32.2 threes per game, and that's dead last in the league. So there's definitely been a switch, and a lot of it came from Steph Curry and kind of building from that. That year, he shot 45.4% on 11.2 attempts per game. He won the MVP. What did Curry do for the game? And how did he impact the way that three-point shooting looks today?
Well, the biggest thing is what he does, and what all the great ones do, is that they blaze a trail that's never been blazed before. They find some niche about them and their game that not only allows them to be great, but it creates a portal of sorts to greatness for others. And, you know, Curry is definitely, you know, one of the all-time great shooters to ever play in the NBA. But his ability to shoot from such deep range and do it at a relatively consistent level has allowed so many others to enter that NBA space as a stretch big when they may otherwise not even get drafted or not even be able to sign with a team. And so, you know, his evolution as a scorer from beyond the three-point line has been instrumental in the growth of the NBA, specifically when you talk about perimeter players and how no longer are you 7 feet tall and you must play at the rim. You can actually shoot threes. You can actually put it on the floor and do some things that in the past, seven-footers and traditional big men have not been able to do.
And a lot of times that's become kind of the expectation. A lot of players find it hard to stay on the court if they can't shoot the three ball.
Yeah, you look at the Celtics as a great example of that. I mean, they have guys that, again, they play very specific, limited niche roles in part because of their inability to knock down threes. That's why you'll see, you know, an Al Horford, for example, seeing more minutes than, let's say, a Luke Kornet, who doesn't necessarily shoot threes, has the ability to shoot facing the basket, but has not put together a body of work that makes you feel comfortable and confident that he can knock down threes.
Yeah, and I mean, that Warriors team saw success. I think that was 73-9 they went that year, of course, NBA record. They lost to the Cavs 4-3 in the finals, that famous comeback. In terms of Curry, if it wasn't him, would it have been someone else? And did the NBA need that one key player to have kind of this three-point explosion, or would it have happened regardless?
Yeah, I think I think it would have happened, but I definitely think that it would not have blown up the way it did with Curry. You know, not only was he knocking down, you know, big shots, but he was doing it from ridiculous range. And that was really made his success a bit eye-catching because, he proved himself to be more than just someone who can get buckets. He proved he had some style, some panache with his bucket getting. So, yeah, I think that's how that would play out.
And then in terms of kind of the NBA used to be dominated by bigs, as we talked about, and now we're seeing kind of more those guards taking control. From 2015 to 2018, there were four guard MVPs, Curry twice, Harden and Westbrook. Kind of how has the three-point shot opened up kind of that lane for guards to really take over the game?
Well, it's created opportunities that didn't exist otherwise. You know, before, you know, if your guard was on the little side, then you just played him limited minutes. Whereas now you can actually, you know, craft your offense to get, you know, hit multiple guys, you know, in that space on the floor and hopefully, you know, be successful. So I would definitely say that's part of this for sure.
And then in response to that, the last four MVPs have been won by bigs. Jokic has won three of them. Embiid won one. Kind of both those guys can shoot threes. Another big, Wemby, who just came into the league, he can shoot the ball well. How has that kind of impacted the bigs and kind of their resurgence as dominant?
Yeah, well, the bigs have to understand that whatever you were told and taught as a youth, you're going to have to scrap that because you're going to have to become more like those little teeny bitty guards that are running around here as far as knocking down shots, as far as, you know, being able to stretch the defense and such. So, yeah, it's absolutely been a bit of a game changer in that regard for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%. And I think kind of just seeing this across the league, I think it definitely makes it more entertaining, although people complain there's too many shots being taken. But seeing a 7 foot, I think Wemby is 7'4", 7'5", seeing him knock it down from beyond the arc, that's something you just would not even think is possible right just a few years ago. So it's now time to play my favorite new game called the On Deck Hot Seat, where we bring in an upcoming guest for a moment to ask them some tricky NBA questions. I want to welcome in NBA expert Bobby Manning, who will be the first ever contestant on the On Deck Hot Seat. Let's get into the questions. All right, so question number one. Who would win if they played today, the 2024-25 Boston Celtics or the 2008 Boston Celtics?
I am going to go 2025. I think there's just too much offense that you have to contend with on this Celtics team this year. And honestly, going back to 2008, it's a great defensive team, one of the great all-time defenses, but there's some guys on that starting lineup, you know, Kendrick Perkins, even Rajon Rondo, who aren't as, worrisome as offensive threats. With this Celtics team, you got to deal with Holiday, White, Tatum, Brown, all the way through Porzingis and into that second unit there, whereas 2008, I don't think had the level of depth that this team does here. So the game has evolved. The offense has reached an all-time level with this Celtics team this year. So I would give an edge to them, although 2008 with KG and Pierce would be super competitive.
That's true. Moving on to the next question. Would you rather build your team around prime Steph Curry or prime Nikola Jokic?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm going to go with Jokic because you see what the Nuggets have right now. Jamal Murray, who's declined a bit over the last year or so here through injuries and whatever else is going on there, and they've lost pieces like Bruce Brown and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. You can still run everything through Jokic. He can still be competitive, whether teams are playing him to be a scorer. He's able to go to the passing game and get 10-plus assists, even with up and down cast of characters around him in terms of skill level. And if they force him to be a scorer, I know they lost the other night in Washington, but able to go out there and get you 50 points. Mm-hmm. The other night, 40 points. So if you're playing him to be a scorer, he's going to take all those points too at as high of a level as you can imagine. So you're getting the best of both worlds there. Steph's a good facilitator, but I think that two-man game with Draymond's been so essential to his skill set there that you're going to need another piece to be able to complement him there. Jokic certainly needs help too, but we've seen him make it work with a variety of different skill sets and talent levels around him. Guys that probably wouldn't even be able to get on the court in other spots have been able to go to the playoffs with Jokic there in Denver. So I'm going to lean him. I think his defense, in terms of having him be the anchor your defense, has come a long way too, so you can have at least a competitive defense starting with him. And this is, you know, Curry and whatever else is around him versus Jokic and whatever else is around him. Like, it's not Warriors versus Nuggets, it's just those two. I'm gonna lean Jokic, even though Curry at his height was pretty staggering there. I feel like we're still not even seeing the height of Jokic right now. It feels like every year he's just getting a little bit better, even though he's close to 30 now. So I'm gonna lean toward him. I think we're starting to see him build the framework of a top 10 career right now, and Curry's in that range too. But yeah, if Jokic was able to pass him, I think he's in the top 10 all time over Curry.
Moving on to our third question. Team USA has been dominating the Olympics for years with their kind of surplus of NBA talent. Which country do you think will be the first to take the gold from them?
Oh yeah, back to Jokic, you gotta go Serbia. If they squeaked out that game in the semifinals last year, and they were right there. I think all they needed was one more basket down the stretch of that game. And I keep going back to the Bogdanović wide open three he had there that rimmed in and out. I think if that shot goes down, they beat the U.S. this year and move on. And I think potentially beat France for the gold medal there. And France is another strong contender, especially as Wembanyama emerges, and he gave them a good push in that game too there. Mm-hmm. But as long as Serbia has Jokic playing at this level and some other complimentary pieces around him, like Bogdanović and like some others there, Micić, I like from Charlotte there, I think they're going to have the best shot of being the USA team straight up, just because of how staggering of a matchup Jokic is.
Thank you for coming on for a brief moment, and I'm excited to have you on the show next week.
Absolutely. Thanks, Abraham.
Moving on to the Celtics, I would like to crown them as one of the teams that changed the game. I think Joe Mazzulla deserves a lot of credit for how the league looks like right now. In their championship 2024 season, they attempted 42.5 threes per game, and they also set the offensive rating record in the NBA, which was 122.2, and finished with a plus minus of 11.3. They had a dominant season, and their volume of threes was evident.
True, very true. And that it's one of those things that you're definitely mindful of, without question. Three-point shot, bottom line, it is the ultimate game changer for every organization trying to accomplish the one thing that they all have a thirst for, which is winning a championship. And so teams really are, kind of figuring out how to best utilize that shot, because it's more to it than just taking threes. I mean, often you'll see situations where teams, because of the threat that they present from 3-point range, get some opportunities to score at the rim that they otherwise wouldn't get. So, it's really smart. It's really important to understand how to utilize, that particular situation.
And to the Celtics' credit, with GMs like Danny Ainge, Brad Stevens, they've kind of filled out their roster with these like high level shooters. And have they kind of laid this blueprint to fill your roster like that? And will this kind of recipe success, do you think, work for others?
Well, they've won a championship, and this is kind of how they've done it. So they have the benefit of wisdom that has proven itself to be what they needed in order to win at all costs. But I think it's going to be something that will be discussed and certainly looked into, and certainly, some type of agreement of some sort, kind of come into play. But again, just to kind of reiterate, the 3-point shot is the shot that's not going anywhere. And a team's ability to understand and embrace its value goes far in determining how far that team will go.
I would definitely agree. And I'd like to kind of bring up a team that kind of went after this strategy earlier on, but came up short, and they may be forgotten because of that. The 2018-19 Rockets fell one game short of beating the KD-led Warriors for a trip to the NBA Finals. They took 45.4 threes per game that season. This is when threes were down as opposed to 2024. So that number was even higher back then. In that game seven that they lost to the Warriors, they missed 27 straight threes.
Mm.
So, kind of, do you think the Rockets would have gotten this credit the Celtics are getting now if they, for kind of exposing the mathematical advantage, if they had won that game, if they had maybe won the finals? And then what would that team's legacy look like today?
Yeah, they would definitely be viewed rather differently than they are today. And you know, when it comes to that type of stuff, it there's really no definitive right or wrong way to build your roster, right or wrong way to go out acquiring talent. You just got to get talent that works and can win games. And when you're doing those two things, which go hand in hand, you're going to be pleased with whatever the outcome is. And that's something that, again, they certainly have to bake that thought into any and all processes that they have involving roster adjusting and things of that nature.
Just speaking on the NBA as a numbers game, kind of with the three-point shot being added in 1979, kind of 3 points, just there it is, 1.5 times greater than 2 points. Is that too great of a difference? Is this one of the things that contributes to NBA fans calling this boring basketball? Is this why we're seeing so many threes being taken? Is it too great of a difference?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I think one of the reasons why you're seeing so many more threes taken is because, you know, threes in many respects is kind of the pathway to least resistance when you're talking about basketball. You know, when you're taking lots of threes, more times than not, you're not necessarily working as hard as you normally would to get a good shot. And you may or may not have, you know, the stove on or something like that. There's so many different, you know, ways that you can kind of look at that and view that. And it's important that you know, you understand and embrace that reality for sure.
Adding to that, we've seen kind of the drastic scoring change that you talked about earlier. In the 2000-2001 season, the league average for points per game was 94.8. And back then, the league average for threes taken was 13.7. Mm. Last season, the league average points per game was 114.2. And now they're taking 35.1 threes per game. And so kind of, is this kind of the main reason that we're seeing such a scoring jump? Or is it just speak to the skill of the players as well? Or is it?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a couple of things, but certainly I think the skill is one that is becoming more pronounced. There really is a skill to being, you know, a dead on shooter the way that, you know, so few players are in this league. So I would definitely, you know, kind of go in that direction for sure.
I would agree. I think skill is a huge part of it. I think that these players, although the three-point shot is being utilized more, I would say kind of just their ability to put the ball in the hoop. It's really hard for defenses to keep up with modern-day offense. As much as people like to say defense was better back in the 80s, the 90s, I think offenses have just gone into a much greater level than where they were back then. And yep. I have a question for you. If the league, maybe Adam Silver, was able to go back in a time machine and change how the three-point line was implemented, kind of with that difference I talked about, the 1.5 times greater than 2 points, do you think, knowing what he knows now, he would have changed anything?
No, I think he's pretty committed to doing things the way he's done them. And I don't think there's a lot that can be done or said or typed or written about that's going to move him off of that. I just don't.
And kind of just gearing towards the end, the testament of talent, we kind of already talked about this. how has the three-point line kind of influenced skill today? And has shooting kind of reached its peak, do you think, with athletes like Steph Curry? Or will it evolve even further? And at what point do you think, if so, if it happened, would the two-point shot become pretty much obsolete?
Well, I don't think the two shot is ever going to be obsolete. I just don't think its value will be as much in terms of guys taking it, guys looking to score in that particular space on a night in, night out basis. I don't anticipate that will happen at all. I think there's still room to grow and get better in the profession. So I don't believe they have reached their peak. But the big thing is this. I mean, it's certainly a significant portion of what they do. But I think the best players figure out how to help winning other ways as well. So that'll be something that's worth monitoring going forward.
I mean, even to this point, we didn't think we'd be seeing players pass up an open layup on the fast break for a three-point shot. Today, we're seeing that. Do you think a guy like Larry Bird, what do you think he would look like in today's NBA where he's allowed to chuck up 10 threes a game?
Ooh, that's a good one. Not everyone has the green light like that to do that. That's for sure. Hard to say. I think players like that are just built to be selfless. And I don't know if they would take that many, but again, the way the game is trending now, yeah, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Right. Yeah. So I could see that, but my gut tells me that he wouldn't allow himself to take that many because he'd see so many other opportunities to impact winning and not have to necessarily jack it up 10 times a game.
I mean, how many do you think he would take with his left hand?
Well, that's the thing about it. I mean, I think that might be the better question. Like, how many threes per game will he take left-handed versus right-handed? Yeah. I'd say three or four game. If he's going to shoot 10, probably three or four will be left-handed.
Yeah, I mean, win a couple MVPs while he's at it in today's league.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
All right, well, I think I've gotten to the end of my questions, so I wanted to thank you for coming on the podcast. It was great speaking with you.
Not a problem, Ibrahim. Not a problem at all.
This has been the Distant Replay. I wanted to give another shout-out to our sponsor, Game Time. What time is it? It's game time. If you have any feedback or questions about some of the things we talked about today, feel free to tweet me at ECDistantReplay. As always, remember to like and subscribe if you haven't already so we can keep delivering you the content you need. Make sure to tune in next week when we talk to Bobby Manning. Thanks again for listening. I'm your host, Abe Beitler, signing off.